You are listening to the voice of the Frontline Protector here at the Private Officer Beat Radio. Every week, you'll hear breaking news, topics of training, information for the industry of security, public safety, and law enforcement. So strap in, hang on, we're about to speed off in this episode of the Private Officer Beat Radio. Welcome to this edition of the Private Officer Beat Radio. Glad that you are with us again for another episode of our radio show. This radio show is sponsored and produced by Private Officer International, a private security and law enforcement organization. And you can go to their website at privateofficer.org. The association and the organization's primary goals has always been to assist the frontline private security officer, private police officer, but we do a whole lot more than that. We also support bail enforcement, bail bonds, LP agents, law enforcement officers, regulatory staff, and many more. Again, for more information, go to the website at privateofficer.org. Good morning, afternoon, evening, wherever you might be. I'm Rick McCann, host of the Private Officer Beat Radio. We have a lot to talk about this week, as we do with every show that we put on. I would like to point out before I go any further that we had a great program yesterday, Sunday, the LP Zone. Everything there about is about loss prevention, retail security, asset protection, organized retail crime. In fact, the whole show was done about organized retail crime and what it is and what it isn't and how it's growing and how the definition of organized retail crime has really changed a lot, a whole lot since I got into it many, many years ago. And I think you'll find it very interesting whether you work in the retail security environment or some other area of private security, loss prevention, or public safety. We have several things that we do want to announce today. So this is a very key and vital radio show, and you're not going to want to miss it. So you're going to hang in there for a little bit because we got a few other business areas that we want to take care of. And of course, we always have plenty of news. Today, we're going to be talking for a few moments in the topic segment on latchkey kids. What is a latchkey kid? What does that have to do with the private security industry? Come on now. We're not babysitters. Are you telling me you want us to be babysitters? No, not exactly. But it really does fall into the security industry, and now more than ever. So we are going to talk about latchkey kids and how private security comes into play and how they can not only help, but really possibly expand their business if you're a security company owner. We're also going to be talking today about several key news stories that have happened over the last week. And sadly, the biggest one, one of the biggest ones that occurred in the last week is the mass shooting at the Collier, Tennessee Kroger store that is just outside of Memphis, Tennessee on the west side. Collier is a small, small, small area in Shelby County, and probably one of the last places that you would think that a mass shooting would occur. Two people are dead, 15 people were shot, and this happened at a Kroger store. The 29-year-old shooter, 29-year-old Uck Bang, walked in and began shooting employees and then shoppers and then himself. Police from multiple agencies, EMS, the fire service from multiple agencies responded. It was a horrific scene. Police really didn't know at first what was going on, who was involved. Collier Police Lieutenant David Townsend Bang was eventually identified as the person who opened fire in that Kroger store. What's very unusual about this shooting is that, well, two things really. One, numerous Kroger stores in Tennessee have or have had armed security. Kroger, now deemed to be the largest grocery chain in the U.S., surpassing Walmart, also has their own LP division rotating in and out of stores. Of course, they're unarmed, but they do have a substantial security presence within their stores. I don't know if this particular store had or ever has had armed security or any type of uniform physical security, but it's a possibility. It was not mentioned in any of the news articles that I read. I also have not read the exact reason, if known, that he targeted this store or that he opened fire or that he would somehow just enter the store without any words, without anything happening, and just began shooting. There's a lot of unknowns. We are tracking this. Now, this event marks the second mass shooting at a Kroger store this year. In late March, gunmen opened fire at a King Soopers store in Boulder, Colorado, killing 10 people. And King Soopers is one of the grocery stores that Kroger purchased and is part of the Kroger company. In that shooting, 10 people killed, multiple injured. Is this something new? Is this preventable? Is this something that private security should be worried about or involved in? The answer is yes to all. Private security is involved in these incidents quite regularly, sometimes even having the opportunity of taking the gunman out, and sometimes security officers have been killed during a mass shooting. We don't have the answers for why this happened or whether or not it was involving an incident that previously had occurred at the store, and we don't know if there was security or if there ever had been, but we are looking into it, and we definitely will have updates on this because we do have a news department. They work very diligently and very hard to update and to gather news and information. A story coming out of Washington, D.C. this week has some law enforcement officers quite concerned after a D.C. police officer was indicted Friday on a murder charge that involved a pursuit of a moped. This happened last year in late October. The moped was involved in several minor crimes besides the erratic driving and driving the moped within city limits, which is a violation of the ordinance, but he was involved in some other crimes and they suspected that he might have been armed. Police chased the moped eventually down an alleyway and the moped continued on, entered a street where he was hit by a van and killed 20-year-old Karen Holt was the driver. And while the police officer himself never struck the vehicle, some say that he caused the accident by continuing the pursuit. Washington, D.C., as many other police departments, have a pretty strict pursuit policy when they can pursue someone. The officers say that they were pursuing him because they deemed him to be violent and armed, and not for the motor vehicle violations, but for other suspected crimes. Now, the police officer, Terrence Sutton, was indicted, as was his lieutenant, who helped to cover up some of the things that went on and removed some records. He's been charged with conspiracy and obstruction, Lieutenant Andrew Zawalski. And they both face federal charges relating to this. But some law enforcement personnel, including unions, have already said that this is just another slap in the face to law enforcement, just another way to blame criminals' activities on law enforcement. And as I mentioned many times, this is really a no-win situation. Police today are between a rock and a hard place. They are damned if they do and damned if they don't. And security certainly, certainly falls into that same category. Now, when I come back from my first break, I do want to tell you another big story that came out of the news this past week that did involve private security, and it was a major, major case. You're listening to the Private Officer Beat Radio. Remember, Body Armor USA, we have got what it takes to protect you. It doesn't matter if you're looking for stab-resistant vests or if you're looking for body armor, protective clothing. Check us out today, BodyArmorUSA.com. We'll be right back.
Kyle loved hunting. He was in a tree stand and a support broke. He wasn't wearing a safety harness. I can't help Kyle, but I can help you. Please wear a safety harness. Please take the free hunter safety course, and please be careful.
Who knows what a child will grow up to be? It's one of the coolest things about kids. The unknown. The potential. The chance to do or become whatever they can imagine. But what if something happens during childhood that stops them from reaching that potential? Did you know that preventable injuries are the number one killer of children in the United States? And around the world, one child dies from a preventable injury every 30 seconds. But the important thing to remember about preventable injuries is that they're preventable. We can do something to stop them. Things to make sure kids get the chance to be creative and play. The chance to take chances and explore. The chance to fall down and get back up. Help us give your kids and every kid the chance to grow up, reach their potential, and become whatever they can imagine. Learn how at safekids.org.
nation's capital to this hallowed and sacred space called the National Law Enforcement Museum, because there's a sickness in our country of division and dissension. We have the capacity as a country and as a nation to turn our pain into power, to focus not on the things that divide us, but the things that unite us.
APCOA recognized years ago that the relationship between law enforcement and faith-based organizations, churches, synagogues, mosques, and temples was essential if we were going to serve the communities in their time of need.
We also partner with our faith-based organizations to support these victims of all crimes, but particularly violent crimes.
Every single one of those officers go into that community. They live in those communities. They're part of those communities. They're part of the churches. They're fathers, they're mothers, they're Sunday school teachers, they're volunteer firemen, they're in the National Guard. They're all very much invested in our communities, and I'm convinced there's not a problem in this country we can't fix if we all sat down and committed ourselves to finding real solutions to real problems.
I'm confident that brighter days are ahead based on partnerships like Faith in Blue to ensure that we align to rebuild trust and enhance accountability while forging a constructive path forward.
Building mutual trust and respect in our law enforcement community and the public is a vital tenet to effective and sound policing.
By partnering with our faith-based communities, National Faith in Blue Weekend offers a unique way to reinforce connections between policing professionals and the communities that they serve.
You know, as a little girl in Memphis, Tennessee, there was two entities that were there. That was the church and the police. And even today, it is still the cornerstone of our communities.
Cynicism should die. Doubt should perish. Optimism should prevail. We exist for the communities that we serve.
At the end of the day, really what it comes down to is it's all about relationships. It's all about that interaction, about the common goals and a common respect of what we have for each other. And Faith in Blue gives us an opportunity to do just that. It gives us an opportunity to have that one conversation about who we are, personalizing who we are. When you know people and you listen to people and you respect people, then you find ways in order to be able to build those relationships.
Why do we do this? We do this not for religious purposes, but we do this because of the officers that give themselves in service every single day. It's about the officers that risk their lives. We do this for people like my mother, 73-year-old widow, who is the best human being I've ever known. I want my mother to be able to go to Walmart or Target without fear of being attacked. We do this for the officers that gave themselves in service to protect our democracy on January 6th. We do this because we have faith in our collective humanity and faith in one another.
Every faith-based organization and every law enforcement agency is urged to get involved by participating in the 2021 National Faith in Blue Weekend, Friday, October 8th through Monday, October 11th. For more information, visit faithinblue.org or contact the national office.
On today's program, I want to introduce you to an organization and to an upcoming event that I completely encourage each and every one of you to get involved in. First, I want to give you their website, faithandblue.org, faithandblue.org, where the religious community and law enforcement have been coming together for a number of years to promote unity. An officer at an event last year said it best. Growing up in Memphis, Tennessee, two entities, two groups that kept the community safe, that kept everyone cohesiveness, everyone looked to these two entities in times of good and times of bad. And those two entities were the churches and the police. I grew up in a city, in a bad neighborhood. And at a very young age, I'm talking about before I was 10, I got introduced to law enforcement and started hanging around with my brothers who were in law enforcement. And it helped me. It helped to keep me straight. And now I want to introduce you to this organization who together is making a difference. I also got involved in church at a very young age. So this organization, although almost unknown, it seems, in many areas, is one that I would recommend that you get involved in. You may not be a law enforcement officer. You may not be a minister, a chaplain, or a priest, but you can certainly support the work that this organization does. The National Faith and Blue Weekend is a powerful initiative that builds bridges to more engaged communities. At the heart of the initiative is the reinforcement of connections between the law enforcement professional and the communities that they serve through the reach of houses of worship and the coming together of the community, the faith-based community, and law enforcement. There's really no resource that can match the depth of the faith community in facilitating productive engagement with law enforcement, which, as you know, is needed now more than ever. Now, this year, October 8th through 11th, is the National Faith and Blue Weekend. Go to their website and find out how you can support the effort, not only during the National Faith and Blue Weekend, but also all year round. Get involved. Go to their website at faithandblue.org, and it will tell you how you individually, as a company, as a church, as part of the community, can get involved. I wholly support them and recommend that you get on board as well. In today's show, as I said, we are going to be talking later on in the topic segment about Latchkey Kids and how private security not only can support the families, but also perform good deeds and even increase their business. In this episode, we're also going to be talking about two very different and yet vital aspects of the public safety and private protective services, and that is accreditation, a topic that we've discussed previously, but now we're taking it the next step, and something I wholeheartedly believe that every first responder should have in their toolbox, and that is mental health education for the first responder. So we're going to be talking about those topics. I guarantee you I will not end the show until I do. What else do we need to talk about in this episode? Well, before we went to the first break, I mentioned to you about some very big news items this past week. But for me, one of the biggest, if not the biggest, came out of Oakland, California, where four militia members pled guilty to the conspiracy of a murder of a federal contract security officer. Four people stood in front of the judge and said, yes, we were part of a group that conspired to obstruct justice. We were part of a group that made things happen that led to the death of contract security officer David Patrick Underwood, who was killed at a federal courthouse May of last year. The men who were followers of the Boogaloo movement, a concept embraced by a loose network of gun enthusiasts and militia-style extremists are accused of conspiring to destroy communications and records and other documents involving this murder. Underwood was working near a demonstration in Oakland, a demonstration over the killing of George Floyd, while he and another officer stood guard outside of the federal building. This employee of the Paragon Systems, who was a contract security company for the federal government, was shot and killed in a drive-by shooting. In April, a federal grand jury indicted Jesse Alexander Rush, 29, of Turlock, California. Robert Blancas, 33, of Castro Valley, California. Simon Sage Yabarro, 23, of Los Gatos. And Kenny Matthew Misk, 21, of San Lorenzo, all on charges of conspiracy to obstruct justice. They may not have pulled the trigger, but they were involved in the murder of this officer. And in many states, you don't have to pull the trigger. You could be the getaway driver. You could just have knowledge of it, and you could be charged with the same crime as the person who did pull the trigger. All four of those face up to 20 years in prison and a $250,000 fine. They are scheduled back in court December of this year for that sentencing. Currently, Blancas is the only defendant who does remain jailed. He also pled guilty to a child enticement charge after federal prosecutors said they discovered dozens of pornographic photos and videos of a 15-year-old during their investigation of the security officer's murder. Now, another big aspect, and an alarming one at that, to this story, is that Air Force Staff Sergeant Stephen Carrillo, 32, was arrested in the murder of Officer Underwood and the wounding of his partner. They said it was this Air Force sergeant who used the protest as cover-up for the crime and his escape. With all the commotion in the area, he was able to commit the murder and get away without being detected. Now, he has pled not guilty. And one of the more concerning, alarming, shocking aspects of the story was he was still and is still an active duty Air Force member. The Air Force is not commenting, obviously, for obvious reasons. Carrillo is still incarcerated, but here's another icebreaker, another big, huge, what in the world? He was also arrested after the June 6, 2020 killing of Santa Cruz Sheriff Sergeant Damon Gutzwiller in an ambush in the community of Ben Lomond. Carrillo has also pled not guilty to that murder, and he will be tried separately on that charge as well. The four who have pled guilty in the shooting of the security officer also had information that the Boogaloo group were waging war against the government and against law enforcement, including police officers. And this group is suspected of actively attacking police and even others in uniform, The night of the killing of the courthouse security officer, Underwood, they thought he was a federal law enforcement officer. Prosecutors have said in court filings that the militia group had about 25 members and had formed a quick reaction force that was supposed to carry out attacks during mass demonstrations. The Boogaloo group, a loose term for many like-minded individuals, militias, and extremists, are suspected of many crimes across the country, even instigating some of the demonstrations. It is not hard to believe, but certainly hard to swallow, that we have Americans killing Americans and carrying around these ideologies and these extremist thoughts and plans. It's disturbing to know that the enemy within, they're still out there in your community and in mine. We don't know them. We might even work with them. Right now in Virginia, two police officers are still jailed after the January 6th incident in D.C. These police officers were involved. They entered the offices and are being held without bond. I don't know if one of your coworkers or one of my employees might really be an enemy within, but that's our country today. As private security and private law enforcement, we are targets, and we are targeted hundreds of thousands of times a year. 77 security officers are now dead this year of being murdered. Every day across the country, we see through our news department dozens of security officers injured every day, stabbed, beaten, shot, and others killed. This is the environment that private security and public law enforcement is working in. And it's almost to the point, really, of why. Why would you want to work in those positions, under those conditions, for that pay, that little pay, the lack of respect? It is really far-fetched. Many people cannot understand why police are even on the job, or security officers, for that matter. And yet they are. We have a lot of news and some other topics that we definitely want to get to when we come back. You're listening to the Private Officer Beat Radio. Remember, you can join the conversation every day on Twitter/Private Officer or on the Facebook pages at Facebook.com/Private Officer International. And remember, read our daily news blog. Great stuff right there. Fresh news daily at PrivateOfficerBreakingNews.blogspot.com. PrivateOfficerBreakingNews.blogspot.com. We'll be right back on the Private Officer Beat. Hey, everyone. You're listening to the voice of the Frontline Protector right here on the Private Officer Radio Network. Now, don't go away, because we are coming right back when we've got a whole lot more right here on the Private Officer Beat Radio. If you're not already receiving breaking news and our bi-weekly newsletter, Officer Down reports, and discount training news in your personal or business email, then go to our website right now at privateofficer.org.
privateofficer.org. A Dropbox will come down. Just fill out your info, and you'll be the first, one of the first, for sure, to know about what's happening in the security industry. You'll know when a security officer is killed. You'll also get these great discounts on training and equipment and so much more. privateofficer.org.
I met Luke when I was pretty much born. We kind of just grew up together. He got his license when he was 16. We were going to the beach, and Luke was driving, and I was in the passenger seat. And all of a sudden, I don't remember anything. I wasn't conscious for it. We got hit by a drunk driver. I feel like I knew right away that it was never going to be the same. I don't know. The doctors, they were telling me I was so lucky to be alive. When I found out that he died on impact, I didn't really feel lucky. And sometimes I still don't. Drinking and driving is completely unnecessary, and I think it's selfish if you do it. It's not worth taking that risk, because you never know what's going to happen.
Well, just this week, we got a beautiful picture of a private security officer from 1903. He looked more like a train conductor than a security officer. The uniform and the square round hat. And it was gorgeous. And we also was able to obtain another photo of an African-American security officer in New York City around 1965 or 66, they believe, dressed in uniform in a retail store with his wooden nightstick in hand and looking like he really meant business. We'd love for you to get involved in working with us and supporting us in this virtual museum that we are continuing to work on. Our virtual museum using the top of the line, most current methods of displaying pictures, videos, news stories. If you've ever gone to any virtual museum online, and if you haven't, I encourage you to check out a couple of them and see how they work. You'll understand the importance of us putting this together. So not only can the members of Private Officer International and our followers and supporters can see the history of private security, but also those who don't know a whole lot about the private security industry can see how it's really evolved, and it certainly has, and it continues to evolve today. Get involved as a curator. Contact us at helpdesk@privateofficer.com, helpdesk@privateofficer.com. We'd love for you to get involved. Well, how do I get involved? What do I do? What is this all about? I don't have a lot of time. I work a lot of hours. Well, lucky for you, this doesn't take a lot of time. If you want to be involved, if you want to help us in curating photos or video or information, contact us at helpdesk@privateofficer.com. What we're looking for is for people to search the internet, people to search historical sites and come up with these videos and pictures and information from the very start of private security, as far back as we can get it, up to the current day, along with many companies. We want to recognize the early companies that started, as well as some of the newer companies that have used technology to really fast forward the security industry. Again, contact us at helpdesk@privateofficer.com. Two very important topics that I want to discuss today that I've brought up before and to no fault of anybody's, really. We've kind of let them sit in the back burner as we did this virtual museum. But the time has come for us to move it forward. The first topic that we have mentioned in the past is accreditation. The time has come when a security license just is not enough. A company business license just is not enough. Although most states do now regulate the private security industry, they don't accreditate them, and there's a difference. A license simply is an application, and if you meet the qualifications, you're approved, you pay your license fee every year, every 2 years, and you're good to go. But we're going to jointly form a new accreditation process for not only the security industry, but for private investigators, private police, bail enforcement, bail bonds, public safety, retail security, loss prevention, and organized retail criminals, crimes. Not the criminals themselves, but the investigators. We're going to accreditate, and we're also going to credentialize. And there is a difference. Let me explain. An accreditation is a model based on an analysis and self-assessment that promotes the establishment of community-adopted performance targets and qualifications and standards for the private protective service industry. So it's geared toward the actual business, the company, the school. The credentials are career enhancements and development models that recognizes the individual professional's accomplishments and their competency in their various areas of employment, whether that be investigator, uniform security, loss prevention, or a school administrator or instructor. We have put this together previously. We were just about 3 years ago, almost at the point of launching this. Several things came up, including COVID, and of course, many things had to be put on the back burner. In the U.S., less than 6%, and this is the national statistics, less than 6% of private protective agencies have any type of secondary organized verified accreditations or any type of credentials that would certify either the agency or the individual. Accreditation is an extremely important part of any professional organization. If you are a realtor, you can be accredited. The fire service and EMS is accredited. Health professionals and those organizations in that profession can be accredited. Almost every true profession these days are accredited, except for the private security industry. Because, as I say, we had a large majority of this process put together, we should be able to launch this early 2022. We will be putting out more information, but if you would like to get involved, either as part of the accreditation board, or you yourself or your company would like to get an early start on being accredited, contact us at helpdesk@privateofficer.com. We will have a standard application and the steps of becoming accredited out probably by the end of this year. The website will be up by early next year or possibly sooner. We have been asked for this by many companies, not only private security companies, but actually in-house security departments, which was surprising. Hotels, resorts, and others. Hospitals, security staff. So we're going to be working on this very hard, very strong throughout the rest of this year, and we'll be announcing more in the upcoming months. Be sure to get our news blog. Sign up for the Private Officer newsletter and news alerts. That information will be in there as well. If you don't already get our email alerts, go to privateofficer.org. A box will drop down. You'll be able to put your name and info in there, and you'll be on our mailing list, and you'll get all that information right there. Accreditation is extremely important. The second topic that is very important is mental health education for first responders. We're teaching firefighters and EMS responders, public and private law enforcement, mental health education. And this course is going to be, the second part of it, is going to be released online at armorcollege.org in the next month, before the end of the year for sure. This will be a course that's designed to teach you how to recognize mental health emergencies, what are the various mental health diseases. We'll also be talking about safety for the provider, for the medical responder. You don't have to be a medical responder to need this. Everybody that deals with the public these days or is a first responder needs the various levels of mental health training, and it's very important for security officers to also be involved. We've done a couple of online mini talks about mental health response and emergencies, but this is a much more defined, more aggressive education for first responders, and I think that everyone in the security industry should be involved. It will be available very soon. Again, if you don't get our newsletters or our breaking news alerts, please go to privateofficer.org. Sign up today, because that's how we communicate, is through our breaking news platform. There's a lot of news. Go to our website, privateofficerbreakingnews.blogspot.com, to read more of our breaking news. Now, when I come back from this break, we're going to be talking about latchkey kids and how security officers can make a difference. We'll be right back.
For a minute, I'm a high school math teacher, and I'm a firefighter.
Ma'am, we're going to have you out in just a minute, okay?
I'm a designer.
I'm a retired VP in business.
And I'm a student.
I'm a mother.
I'm a business analyst, and I'm a volunteer firefighter.
You thought we just fought fire?
Firefighters get trained to do so many things.
Right here. Be sharp.
What we do is serious business.
Three quarters of the nation's first responders are volunteers. That includes here in Connecticut. And lately, it's been harder than ever, with fewer citizens volunteering.
From teenage cadets like me,
to seasoned veterans like me.
So what are you waiting for?
You ready to make a difference?
Ready to join our team?
Your community needs you. We need you. Visit EverydayHeroCT.org or stop by your local firehouse today and take the first step of joining your fire department.
When I was a gang leader, we probably did business together. Because when people like you buy knockoffs on the street, often the money goes to gangs. And gangs use this easy money for other activities. In other words, they're getting a lot of bang for their buck.
Counterfeits hurt, but you have the power to stop them. Go to www.ncpc.org/get real. A message from the National Crime Prevention Council and the Bureau of Justice Assistance, U.S. Department of Justice.
Latchkey kids. You probably heard the term, might have even been one yourself. A latchkey kid really is just a child who returns after school to an empty home with no one there to oversee him or her, no one there to provide supervision, no one there to provide care. That child or children are often left alone for hours while their parents work. And in many cases, it's a single parent who's out trying to make a living to support herself or himself and the family. Growing up, I was kind of like a latchkey child, but not in the same sense, because luckily, although I was very young after my father passed away when I was barely 14, I spent a lot of time on the streets, but I hung around with my older brother's friends a lot, aka law enforcement officers, and I spent a lot of time at the church and with the church family. So although I spent several years basically on my own for the majority of the time, it wasn't quite like the latchkey kid that we're talking about today. Many of them have no one there to support them for many hours at a time, even being left a whole day or overnight by themselves. For decades, the share of U.S. children living with a single parent has been rising, accompanied by a decline in marriage rates and a rise in births outside of marriage. A new Pew Research Center study of 130 countries and territories shows that the U.S. has the world's highest rate of children living in a single parent household. Almost a quarter of U.S. children under the age of 18 live with one parent and no other adults. In fact, 23% more than three times the share of children around the world. The national or worldwide global average is just 7% who live in a single parent home. The study, which analyzed how people's living arrangements differ by religion, also found that in the U.S., children from a Christian and religiously unaffiliated families are about equally likely to live in this type of arrangement with a single parent family home. In comparison, in China, just 3% of children live alone. In Nigeria, 4% of children live with a single parent family. And 5% of children in India live in a single parent household. In neighboring Canada, It's a little bit higher there at 15% living in a single parent home. This leaves, unfortunately, a lot of young children and teenagers alike to have a lot of freedom, a lot of unsupervised time. And unfortunately, as we have seen for years, but more so in the last 10 years, the substantial increase of teenagers, juveniles, being involved in violent crime. Well, that's all well and good, but how am I, the security officer, supposed to help with that? Around the country, and globally probably, private security officers are on the front line everywhere. And with that, we know that we're often the first person on the scene of criminal activity, complaints, disturbances, trespassing, teens loitering, and so forth. In our daily duties, many of the 1.4 million or 1.5 million security officers interact with teenagers and young children on a daily basis in schools, apartments, subdivisions, low-income housing complexes, shopping malls, just about everywhere. Our security staff across the country are talking to, seeing, maybe even responding to issues that concern children or involve children or teenagers. I know from my own experience throughout my years of security company ownership that our staff frequently was involved in teenage complaints at apartments and subdivisions, gated communities, crimes committed by these children and teens, and we've had a lot of involvement, a lot of interaction with teenagers. As private security officers and private police officers, we have a great opportunity here. Not just enforcement, but also we could become involved in mentoring. We could become involved in supporting. We can become involved also in reporting some of the issues that we see of child neglect and child abuse. And knowing the difference between one and the other is very important for any security officer that works out in the field with the general public and young adults or young children. As security and public safety and private police, it's our duty to know what's happening on the properties where we're assigned, whether that be a shopping mall or an apartment complex or a school or something in between. So here it is, an opportunity for us to make a change for the good. As a private security company owner, I've had the opportunity numerous times at apartments and low-income complexes, subsidized housing, to make a change and to help children. And that was a good feeling. We've given out school supplies. We've given out Christmas gifts. We've been involved in Halloween trick-or-treat programs. And we were a lot more than armed security or law enforcement to these children and teens. We helped to set up a computer training station. I've even taken a number of troubled teens through the years and put them through private security training so that when they turned 18, they would have an automatic job. As business owners and individuals employed in these fields, we see everything or we should be seeing everything and hear everything and know everything in the communities that we're involved. If your company has a apartment complex or a low subsidized housing complex or a gated community, whatever it might be, where there's teenagers or children, this is an opportunity for you to step up forward and to get involved in the change necessary in your community. With having so many hundreds of thousands of latchkey children, I don't suggest that you just go into their apartment or into their home without their parents' specific permission. But what I am suggesting is that when you do notice that there's a large group of latchkey children at an apartment complex or coming into a mall or on any premise that you might be assigned to, you can come up with a program to help them, to monitor them, to keep them safe, and maybe even to educate or mentor them. During the past few years, we've noticed a couple of security companies who have stepped up and are doing this very thing. There's a security company in Kansas City, Missouri, who has been doing this for a number of years. We've done a news article on them, and there are other companies, other security providers, who also get involved doing good in their community. When latchkey kids are left alone, that's when they get in trouble. You've heard idle hands, the devil's playground. We need to be supportive in our roles in private security and private law enforcement as much as possible. I suggest that if you do have apartment complexes, gated communities, low-income neighborhoods, or other places that you secure that have problems with teenagers, that you meet with the residents, meet with the property management company and the property manager themselves and say, look, we do have a problem, but I've got these ideas, and we're willing to devote manpower, we're willing to devote money, we're willing to lead the program. We want to keep our children safe, our children out of trouble. Thank goodness for places like the Boys and Girls Club, the YMCA, and other organizations, the church youth organization, CYO. Thank goodness for these organizations that are stepping up and are participating in not just rhetoric, but in real change. Without these groups, without these organizations, especially in the inner city, I can tell you, I grew up in the inner city. I grew up in poverty. I grew up in low housing. I grew up without any money. I can tell you what it's like. If it was not for the people around me, if it was not for the church, for the law enforcement officers that befriended me, if it was not for my support system at that time, I don't know where I'd be. I might be dead or in prison. I might be one of those junkies on the street. But thank goodness, at a young age of 17, I went into the Army. And I had clear direction as to what I was going to do, how I was going to do it. And really, the base of that came from support from the neighborhood, from the church group, from law enforcement, from other people that I became acquainted with. We need to help the youth of today to stop being involved in the pipeline, as they call it. The pipeline taking the youth and sending them to prison. Another effort that you could get involved in is called, well, there's two, diversion plans or programs. Diversion programs make sure that a juvenile offender who's charged with a crime doesn't have a juvenile record. And they set up a program where the juvenile is mentored and goes through this program. And as long as they follow the rules, as long as they conduct themselves in the proper manner and they don't get in any more trouble, that charge is completely expunged off their juvenile record. And you can get involved in that because courts are looking for supportive people to be involved in those programs. Another way that you can be involved in, many schools, especially after the last 2 years, many schools have diversion plans as well, and their SROs and security teams have several different types of programs to divert teens and young children from being charged criminally, but rather they go through various programs to keep that charge off from their record. You can volunteer. You can be a mentor. You can be a coach. You can be involved in the system of making things better. I want to encourage each of you to be involved, but really I want the business owners to get involved. Latchkey Kids, there's tens of thousands in your neighborhood, in your community, your city. You got to get involved to make a change. It's one thing to make money, but making change is so much better. I do a lot of volunteer work. I've always been involved in many different areas of the community, and I have to be honest, it's selfish of me to do so because I get more out of it than most people probably get out of my service. It makes me happy. It brings me a feeling that money cannot bring me. So before we end this program, I really want you to look deep within you. I really want you to heed the words and say, I am going to be part of the change. And the youth of tomorrow are the youth of today. And I want to start there. I might not be able to talk a convict or a drug addict or a homeless person into change. But while they're still young, while they're still pliable, while they're still listening, we can make a difference in their lives. That's going to do it for this episode of the Private Officer Beat Radio. Thanks for being with us. And remember, you can be that difference. Until the next time, be blessed, be safe, and we'll see you right back here on the radio.